Little House on the Prairie and Laura Ingalls Wilder. Well, not just a saccharine television show from the last century or a stack of children's books. Hi, I'm Suzanne Lang, and today's novel idea brings us two takes on these classic books and the women behind them. Bikmin Nguyen's latest novel is Pioneer Girl, which contains a literary mystery involving Laura Ingalls Wilder and her daughter Rose. But at its heart is a story of identity and belonging for a young Vietnamese woman trying to break free from her immigrant roots. Rosemary Manchester talks with the author in just a minute. Later on, Lynette Hunter, a performer who has portrayed Laura Ingalls Wilder, gives us her take. So stay with us. It's a novel idea. We are a nation of immigrants, and Bikmin Nguyen takes that on in her memoir, Stealing Buddha's Dinner, and in her first novel, Short Girls. And now she brings us Pioneer Girl, the story of a young woman's journey through her Vietnamese immigrant guilt by way of a literary mystery involving Laura Ingalls Wilder, author of the popular Little House on the Prairie books, and her daughter, Rose Wilder. Nguyen goes by the name Beth, and here she reads from the opening paragraphs of Pioneer Girl.
In August 1965, a woman named Rose walked into my grandfather's cafe in Saigon. That much is known. My grandfather would say that's the beginning of this story. My mother would say I should have left it at that. Back then, my mother and grandfather lived in the rooms above the cafe. She was 12, an only child whose own mother had died the year before. In the evenings, my grandfather taught her English from a friend's borrowed textbook. He had a feeling, he used to say, that it was the language of his future. On that day, when an American woman sat down at one of his teak tables, looked around at the blue-trimmed doorways and the ceiling fans that had paddles shaped like ginkgo leaves, he took it as a sign. She asked for coffee or tea, whichever was freshest, and he brought her a cup of French roast with condensed milk and half a baguette, using his most careful pronunciation to ask if she needed any kind of help. It was monsoon season, the part of the year when heat and steam were the same, unrelenting. The traffic of bicycles and mopeds and pedicabs crisscrossed the windows, and the woman seemed glad to be free of it. There weren't many American women in Vietnam, and she didn't seem like a nurse or aid worker. She was old, surprisingly so, hair a silver sweep beneath a straw hat. "Oh, I don't need help," she said. "I need conversation."
Something that that caught my eye, and some of it might be on the blurb on the book, kinship transcends the usual identity. And, of course, this is a book of a mingling of cultures and finding friends across cultural lines. And I like that concept. The book revolves around Lian's adaptation to life in the United States, and the guide which she has selected to lead her through that process is Rose Wilder, the daughter of Laura Ingalls Wilder, the author of Little House on the Prairie.
Well, Lee was born in the United States, and so she's not so much adapting as she is looking for a friend through literature, which is a familiar feeling, I think, for a lot of readers. And certainly that's probably the most autobiographical part of this book for me, which is that when I was growing up, I was really into the Little House on the Prairie books by Laura Ingalls Wilder. And it would seem unlikely, maybe, to some that an Asian American girl would find so much to identify with in those books, but I did. And everyone who reads those books pretty much really identifies with that family and with mm-hmm. Laura in particular. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it made me realize that when you identify with a character, you're identifying with that character's sense of humanity and that character's feelings. And that essentially transcends race and gender.
So you chose The Little House on the Prairie books as a guide for Lien because you really like those books.
Well, I guess I would think of it more as a parallel structure.
Oh.
Which is to say that The Little House on the Prairie books are about a family in the mid to late 1800s moving across the United States, you know, westward. Mm-hmm. They were pioneers looking for a new home.
Mm-hmm.
And the immigrant experience in America is essentially the same thing. No matter where immigrants come from, they have the same experience of, you know, moving to a new land, starting over, mm-hmm. getting a sense of home, mm-hmm. resettling, moving again. And there's a lot of conflict and a lot of uncertainty
mm-hmm.
That come with that experience.
Mm-hmm. And your protagonist and her family moved a lot when they went from one town to another.
Yes. The protagonist, Lilian, is in a restaurant family.
Mm-hmm.
And so that family was always moving around looking for a better restaurant to mm-hmm. manage, a better place to live. And I wanted that to be sort of a parallel to the way the Ingalls family moved from homestead to homestead looking for, the best farm, the place where they could finally raise just the right crop.
Yeah. Lilian has no intention of staying in the restaurant business. She's gone to university. She's is she in the process of writing her dissertation, or has she completed it?
She completed her dissertation, but is now not certain what to do with it.
And her dissertation is on Edith Wharton.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did she happen to choose Edith Wharton? Was this something that you're particularly interested in?
I do. I love Edith Wharton.
Oh, I do,
That's
too.
That's true.
Right.
But I wanted the protagonist to pick a topic that wasn't about her background.
Yes.
Because that was a point of contention. It's something that I want to address in the whole book, this sort of implicit question of why would an Asian American person or so-called ethnic person be interested in Edith Wharton or Little House on the Prairie, Laura Ingalls Wilder, or any of those writers. And I kind of wanted to disrupt the idea that because you're from one background, you need to focus on that background.
That's right. You wanted to address that really silly question of why would anybody be interested in...
Yeah.
Well, yes.
And, the protagonist, Lee, you're right. She has no intention of staying in a restaurant family, just as Laura Ingalls Wilder's daughter, Rose, had no intention of staying on the farm and mm-hmm. being a farm woman. She wanted to be a city woman as soon mm-hmm. as she could, and she did.
Was it through your reading of the Little House on the Prairie books that you discovered Rose Wilder? Because she's much less known than her mother is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Rose Wilder, interestingly enough, was far more well known.
Yes. Oh,
in her time. In her time.
Oh.
The early, around the turn of the century in the 20s,
mm-hmm.
she was pretty well known as a writer. She wrote mm-hmm. biographies. Mm-hmm. She was a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
She was a genuine writer, and mm-hmm. she had a lot of ability.
Mm-hmm.
So she helped her mother, Laura Ingalls Wilder, mm-hmm. write those Little House on the Prairie books mm-hmm. in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strange, I guess, that nowadays Rose Wilder is a figure who is not known at all.
Oh.
She didn't, even though she worked on those Little House on the Prairie books, she didn't mm-hmm. want any credit for them. She didn't want to have her name on them, certainly, mm-hmm. because she thought they were children's. I mean, she said they were children's books, and she wanted to write mm-hmm. Serious novels.
Mm-hmm. Are they children's books, do you think? How do you think
they
of
are.
Them?
I think they're definitely children's books,
mm-hmm.
but they have an appeal that goes beyond the child's experience. And I think reading them as a child is so different from reading them as an adult.
Yeah. And you, then there was the television series. And your protagonist expresses her dismay at the television series, right?
I had a lot of dismay.
I wouldn't let my children watch it. Because I grew up in Kansas. And so I, lived on the prairie. And I felt that the television presentation was just insulting to the my mother had been a pioneer, and I'd heard her stories. And my mother was really a pretty well-spoken person. But I remember the first time I actually heard her sneer at anything was the television presentation of Little House on the Prairie. She said, I can't stand it. It was nothing like that because, you know, it was such a distortion, not only the story, the characters, the way they smoothed the edges off anything that might be difficult and invented their own stories and characters and put them in.
The show definitely took a lot of liberties, and it was extremely sentimental compared to the books.
Yes. And the mother of Roy Ingalls Wilder came off as kind of wimpy because, you know, her husband said, all right, honey, we're moving now. And she'd say, yes, dear. And they'd be off to the next place to new disasters. And if we only knew it through the television series, I don't think it would be nearly as meaningful to us.
Oh, definitely. I definitely agree with that. But there have been so many different versions of Little House. I mean, there are musicals and...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, and there's someone who wrote a series of children's books based on Rose's experience.
Yes.
Growing up, there's just sort of continued interest in these books, not just in America, I think worldwide.
Oh, good. And several of my friends are actually working on material about Rose because they got so interested in Rose Wilder as a different type from her mother. Well, the fact that she was single, I suppose, liberated her to
she go was out. Divorced. Yes, and that was really unconventional at the time.
Yeah. She was truly unconventional, and of course that's very interesting, particularly to the feminist writers, and so she's having kind of a boomlet around here. People are talking about
her. You know, the thing about Rose Wilder that was so interesting to me is that she went to Vietnam in 1965 as a reporter. It was the last assignment she ever did because she died 3 years later. And that was really where my novel started, this idea that there could be a literal connection between that family and the family of a Vietnamese you know, group of people who eventually left Vietnam and came to the United States. So I was excited to find that connection. But Rose Wilder was a very interesting and kind of controversial figure. She was she was one of the founding mothers of the libertarian movement in America.
I didn't know that.
That's not in the book because...
Right. That's one of the things you had to take out.
Yes. Didn't really want to go there.
Your story is a story of mothers and daughters. Laura Ingalls Wilder and Rose, and then Lillian and her mother, who has very little patience with Lillian's literary interests and just wants her to find her place in the restaurant and stay home with the family and work. And that isn't at all what Lee has in mind.
Yes, definitely. And that I wanted Lee's relationship with her mother to reflect in some ways the turmoil that went on between Rose and her mother, Laura.
Yes.
They did have a difficult relationship, especially when they were writing the Little House on the Prairie books, because Rose was such a talented writer. And sometimes Laura did not want to take her advice about how to write the books.
Right.
And so they would get into arguments. And also, Laura wanted her daughter to be at home.
Yes.
She wanted her to stay in Missouri, where they had settled. And there was no way Rose was ever going to stay there forever.
Right.
And Lee experiences a similar feeling. She has this great sense of obligation to her family. But at the same time, she just yearns to be free, whatever free means to her.
And her brother got away. Her brother didn't stay, Lee's brother didn't stay with the family. He left.
Yes, that's part one of the major conflicts of the novel for Lee's family, which is that her brother just decides to leave. He just literally escapes.
Yes.
He doesn't even say goodbye, and he grabs his freedom. And Lee finds that really audacious and also maybe a little bit inspiring.
And so unfair.
And unfair.
How come he could escape and she had to stay and do the work in the restaurant? When you were choosing Little House on the Prairie as the guide for Lee's life journey, were there any other books that occurred to you that might serve in the same purpose?
It's not that I chose Little House on Prayer. It's just that the Little House on Prayer chose me.
Oh, okay.
That I was so obsessed with those books, and they had been in my mind for years and years that they eventually turned into material for a novel. That's a good way to go about writing.
At last, you could use that
material. Yes, exactly, and figure out why you've been obsessed with something for so long.
I couldn't think of any other books that could have served your purpose for girls. I could think of, if your protagonist was a boy, you could have gone with Tom Sawyer, any number of things. But the only other book I thought about girls was Anne of Green Gables. And the fact that she was an orphan would restrict the plot of any story in which you tried to use Anne.
I read all the Anne of Green Gables books, and though I enjoyed them, I thought they were more sweet and sentimental than the Little House on the Prairie books. I mean, the reason why I love Little House on the Prairie is that they acknowledge all the suffering and the darkness and the pain and the threat of starvation and
that long
fear
winter.
Of death, and all of those worries are acknowledged all the time.
Were you quite young when you first read them?
I started reading them when I was around 7 or 8.
Uh-huh.
I remember very vividly checking them out of the library, and then eventually I owned the copies.
Yes. I can see the, as you described it, in the box, the box set.
The set, yes.
Yes, yes.
I treasured that box set.
Yeah. And
I still have the exact same one.
The fact that Rose Wilder had no living descendants, and all the money from that television show and everything else went to the family of the editor of the book, is that right?
The lawyer, Rose's
lawyer. The lawyer, Rose's lawyer. And in Leland's researching, she comes across a clue that makes her think that the story might be a little bit different.
Well, what happens is that there is a piece of jewelry, a gold pin, in Lee's mother's possession. And Lee knows that her mother and her grandfather ran a cafe in Saigon before they left and came to the United States in 1975. And it takes her a long time, but she realizes eventually, she wonders if the gold pin that her mother has may be tied to Rose Wilder, who had been in Saigon when her grandfather was there running a cafe. And so she searches for these clues, these pieces of evidence to support her theory. And so she has to go on a hunt, basically, to find out what the real story is. And if she does it, and she's looking through archives, which I did do in real life, she finds what she thinks are even bigger clues pointing to a mystery, basically, a literary mystery involving what might be a bigger story with the descendants of, or possible descendants of the whole Ingalls and Wilder families.
And then she goes in search of those possible.
And she goes in search of them.
Yes. I loved the story of her search through the Midwest in the various places where the Wilder family archives are. And I like the contrast between her traveling through the Midwest to those small town museums. And I've been in museums exactly like that, with those glass cases full of dusty artifacts, fans and shoes and button hooks and doodads. And then you went to the research libraries where
well, you know what? In
I'm
real life,
I'm having trouble separating you from Leland.
But in real life, I did do all that. I had to do all of that in order to write about it. And it was so much fun to do that kind of research, but also very strange. These, where they lived, they really chose remote places. And, especially in Missouri, Mansfield, Missouri.
Yes.
Not easy to get to. You just have to drive and drive and drive.
And they spent quite a bit of time there, didn't they, several years?
They spent the rest of their lives there.
The rest of their lives there.
Yes.
Ah, and did Rose?
She grew up there. They moved there when Rose was 8 years old.
Uh-huh.
And so that's where she grew up.
And then later on, you were in serious research libraries. And that's an interesting trip for the reader. Not many of us have that experience of going into the research libraries where you wear white gloves and they bring the things to you and all of that. So that was
That's
a really nice trip.
I think that's probably one of the most exciting parts about being a scholar, I would imagine. I'm not really I wouldn't call myself a scholar.
I think I'd call you a scholar.
But that's got to be one of the most exciting parts is, you know, gaining access to archives.
Yes. And then, of course, your protagonist is kind of light-fingered in the research librarian does the unforgivable thing of lifting a letter. But
yes, exactly. Well, you know, it's every scholar's secret dream, would imagine, to find something new.
Of course.
You know, to find a new piece of...
Yes.
Yeah, a new piece of literature, a new letter, a new photograph.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Lillian certainly did that. And the subtext, while you're looking for Rose Wilder, you're also looking for your protagonist is looking for her brother Sam.
Right. So one of the stories is that Lee is searching for the story behind Rose Wilder and the origin of this mysterious gold pin that her mother now has. And alongside it, Lee also has been sent by her mother to bring her brother Sam back home. And Sam has left for San Francisco, as it happens. Mm-hmm. And so she goes out there to try to bring him back home. Mm-hmm. There was a connection there, too, because Rose Wilder did so much of her own work as a writer in San Francisco.
I wanted to talk a bit about Lillian's father, who was with a friend and was fishing and apparently drowned. And there was some mystery about his death. And then that's another mystery that Lillian is pursuing in the course of the book is... not about her father, but her father's friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Her father's friend, Hugh, and what role he had in their family and what kind of relationship he had with Lee's mother.
Right. And you had a sentence a number of your sentences really grabbed me because you write great sentences. But about your father's death, you say, somehow, my father's being an immigrant made his death seem that much more tragic. To have escaped a war, to have fled his own country, to have started over, to have come such a distance, only to have his life cut short, drowned in a strange river far from home, it seemed unbearably unfair. You say so much in that paragraph. I mean, it just grabs the reader because we realize the journey that this family has made to go from Vietnam and then to come to America, and then they're gypsying over the country to find a place to settle, and then to have such a banal way to end his life.
Well, I think I really wanted to get at this idea of how the American dream doesn't always work out for immigrants. And it is such a powerful story, such a powerful lure. But then there are many times it just doesn't come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Lee is sort of trying to come to terms with, in a sense that her father's story ended in this way, and it seems not right that he was responsible for her livelihood in the United States, but then his life ended too soon. And so that's one of the things that she kind of has to struggle with. It's this idea of how to make their family and how to remember their family. And in many ways, that's what immigrants and actually what all American families have to do is figure out what the story of their family is going to be.
Yes.
What the narrative is going to be and who controls that narrative and how much of it is myth and how much of it is true.
Yeah, but in that one paragraph, you just captured it. The whole, you know, the sadness and the you know, the extent of that long, long journey and then the sudden end of it, an untimely end. Yeah. Another interesting relationship was Lee's friend Amy, who lives in San Francisco. And they were, I believe, in school together. Mm-hmm. And then when Lee goes to San Francisco and stays with Amy, it's a nice presentation of the different ways that the girls view life and particularly the way the two of them handle the mystery that they're trying to solve.
I think writing a novel is all about managing conflict, making sure that the structure of it makes sense, and that in the rise and fall of tension and conflict, and about providing enough contrast. I mean, contrast and conflict often go together. The, you know, the funny and the serious, you know, the light and the dark. And that can help propel us forward.
Yes. And it certainly keeps the reader reading. Yeah.
I hope so.
Oh, well, it worked for me. Beth, it's been such a pleasure to have you here in the studio and talk with you about this book. When I read the book, I just couldn't wait to meet you and talk with you and explore the ways in which you had brought these interesting people together and in contrast and showing their the development of their character and the following the plot.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me here.
Surely, it's been a pleasure.
Rosemary Manchester and Bic Minh Nguyen. You're listening to KRCB's A Novel Idea. When we come back, Rosemary talks with performer Lynette Hunter, who has portrayed Laura Ingalls Wilder for audiences all over the country.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood tree. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in. Just turn me loose, let me straddle my own saddle underneath the western sky. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountain ride. I want to ride through the ridge where the west commences. Gaze at the moon until I lose my senses. Can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in.
That was Emily Mover with her single release of Don't Fence Me In. I'm Suzanne Lang, and this is KRCB's A Novel Idea. Like Bic Minh Nguyen, Lynette Hunter's admiration for Laura Ingalls Wilder began in childhood, and that has grown into her developing the role and portraying Wilder whenever and wherever she can. Let's listen to Rosemary and Lynette.
I asked Lynette Hunter to come into the studio to talk with me about the Little House on the Prairie books. Lynette, you've always had a thing for the Little House on the Prairie books, and you know a lot about Laura Ingalls Wilder.
I have. I started reading Laura at about 7. I loved her sort of naughtiness, her realness, when I was a little girl. And I loved that she was a tomboy because I was a tomboy. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much gobbled her up as soon as I got my first taste of library.
And I've heard you do a presentation in which you became Laura Ingalls Wilder and talked about the books. Do you still do that?
I do, with the less funding in nonprofits and things these days, which is a lot of the ways that I've been funded.
And you've had an opportunity to read Bic Minh Nguyen's book, Pioneer Girl.
I have.
She goes by Beth. So let's use Beth. And her story, well, the story of her protagonist who discovers America through Pioneer Girl, I thought was a very unusual way of presenting the story.
I think it was interesting that her grandfather mm-hmm. in the story gave her the set mm-hmm. of books. And I was immediately drawn. I was drawn first by the cover because it reminded me of the original Laura Ingalls Wilder versions with Helen Sewell as the illustrator. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of clever of them to go back to that early genre. And I must admit, I immediately saw the little Asian girl on the front and thought, oh, what's going to happen in here? So I was really primed. And I'm always glad to have any sort of advertisement of Laura bring her fore to people, because I think what she had to say and the way she said it and mm-hmm. and how she's been loved over the generations. Mm-hmm. At my own presentations, I've had three generations, mm-hmm. sometimes four generations of people, mm-hmm. not only just mothers and granddaughters but also fathers. Mm-hmm. There's been a surprising number of men who have read Laura mm-hmm. as well. So
there may actually be people out there who don't know about Little House on the Prairie and don't recognize the name of Laura Ingalls Wilder. Would you just give a brief introduction so people will have an idea of the story?
So Laura was born in 1867, and she was part of the movement West that when I first started reading her, I was thinking, oh, west to Oregon, west to California, because that's my relationship to the West. But it was actually west from the East Coast that they started. And she had family actually on her father's side that came over on the Mayflower. And then on her mother's side, her great-great-grandmother came over in the early 1700s from Scotland. And so there was, you know, they were pioneers from the very beginning. And Laura's dad had a sense of wanderlust that never diminished. And I think Laura had that. And also, to bring it into Beth's book, Rose.
Rose, inherited. Yes, we'll talk about Rose. What an interesting woman. Yeah. Is the story of Little House on the Prairie pretty much Laura Ingalls Wilder story?
Yes. Uh-huh. And it starts with Little House in the Big Woods. And that mm-hmm. one is really leads, I even though it's a little less literate than some of the other stories, it is really gets you started in the pioneering idea, because there's so much information about how they lived, how they survived, how they were self-sufficient in mm-hmm. that book. And then, of course, her second book was about to honor her husband. Mm-hmm. And their family was a very well-to-do farm family, upper state New York. And then it went on. And she originally just wanted really to tell the tales of her father. Her father was a great storyteller. Mm-hmm. And Rose was very instrumental in getting her mother to write those books, because she loved the stories herself mm-hmm. growing up, and said, mm-hmm. "You, Mama Bess, you really should write these down sometime." Mm-hmm.
And they went through hard times.
Oh, very hard times. And really, in the pioneering era, if people were not Jack of all trades and Jill of all trades, they would not make it. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of stories within her books where people just packed up their belongings in a covered wagon and came out and didn't, for example, hobble their horses at night mm-hmm. and got up in the morning and had no horses. Mm-hmm. And there they were, sitting mm-hmm. in the middle of the prairie. Mm-hmm. By themselves with mm-hmm. all their worldly goods around them. And Pa would say, they would try to help, but he would kind of have to, he would walk away, he'd be like, greenhorns. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you really had to know what you were doing.
I think of those pioneer families in which quite often it was the man who wanted to go west. And some of those women really didn't want to leave the comfort of where they were living. And yet, they didn't have much say in the matter. And their lives were, I'm so glad that she wrote the story of the women, so that we know more about that, what that was like.
Yes. Her mother actually was very involved in the wanting to go in the early days.
Yes.
But there came a point. She was from a very many teacher background. Mm-hmm. And so she began to be very concerned that her girls were growing up too rough and not educated. And at a certain point, she put her foot down with Pa. Mm-hmm. Pa Ingalls, and said, this will be the last move. And it was. And he would have liked to. He even made noises later on about going further, going on to California, going on to Oregon. Mm-hmm. And she didn't have to say too much at that point. It was, you know. Yeah.
And they moved around a lot.
They did. They did.
Was that unusual for that time?
I think not for people with that spirit.
Ah.
But I think, you know, there were those people, and I think it would have been a different story if Pa had not married Caroline.
Yeah.
That if she had not been interested in doing it. And they had so many failures that they to, you know, back up from. And
yeah, I thought that the fact that they moved around made it quite different from some of the pioneer stories I'd read, where, you know, they put down roots and then they had to stay there no matter, you know, if the crops failed or there was a storm or a blizzard or what, they were stuck. But the Wilders had some mobility.
They did. Mm-hmm. And I think that was there's just Pa's impetus. And there were people that they just couldn't move on.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, and they kind of hedged their bets on that first move when they left Wisconsin and went to the prairie, the little house on the prairie, because they still owned their property in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of stories that were part of their background that were never told because they were a bit sad. They were a bit too sad, even though. And I think the thing that saved them in all the stories was that they always found the good side, the silver lining. And
that's right.
And no crying over spilt milk. Those little homilies are running through all the books. Well, in the beginning, too, when she was first trying to market her work, Rose marketing it for her, really, there was a glut of pioneering stories out there. And because her story seemed to be written for an adult reader, there was too much of that out, and they just couldn't get interest in it. And one of Rose's illustrator friends said, what about a child's book? And that's kind of, and Beth touches on that in her book as well.
Was she early on in writing books for children and young adults, or was there a lot of that at the time?
Laura really, she was imagining telling her Pa's stories, but she wasn't really imagining telling them to children.
Ah.
She was just imagining telling the tale of, it really was after they got some advice from these illustrator friends and an editor at the first publishing house that they were actually able to market the first book to, which was Pioneer.
Who were her readers? Were they adults or?
Well, it's become very, I mean, it was aimed eventually at you know, like probably second grade through junior high readers, but so many librarians and parents and teachers just fell in love with the books that her fan base is all ages, really, at this point.
Is she still being read?
Oh, yes.
Is she?
Is she? And I have to say that at one point, when the whole Little House on the Prairie TV series came out, I was so irritated because they really took license with the stories.
Yes.
And then I had young children who would come up to me after performances and say, I know who you are because I watched your and it was like, okay, there's the silver lining in this dark cloud.
I know. I couldn't watch the television series. Did you come from a pioneer family?
In a way, the ones that I really know are the Swedish side of the family. And so they came and settled in the East Coast briefly and then in Kansas and then evolved to Oregon.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I do come from pioneers, particularly on my mother's side. My mother was born on an Indian reservation in Oklahoma, and they lived in a sod house. And my granddad was a Texas Ranger and an Indian agent. So I come from, you know, that's always been part of the story. And when the family would get together, they talked a lot about their lives in very joyful terms. You know, they I never knew my grandmother, so I didn't hear the hardship stories. But I you know, it's the milieu from which I came, the pioneer stories. And my mother was always a little uncertain about Little House on the Prairie. She thought, well, it was a different experience from hers. That's probably it. And then particularly when the television series came out, forget it.
There's been a couple of movies made for television, too. And I watch people, friends and colleagues have brought things to me because of my interest in her. And there was a movie done a while back, and I saw it and I was like, oh my gosh, Laura is going to turn over in her grave, because they had to bring the sexual stuff into the thing, and you know, to get to sell it, and it's just which I have to say, I felt a little bit of that in Beth's book, that there was this need to tell a bit of a titillating story,
right?
And I have to say, I think Rose and Laura would turn over their grave. I mean, Rose was a real bohemian, but
let's talk about Rose. Right. Rose Wilder, who appears in the book in Vietnam. And she really did go to Vietnam.
Yes, she did.
Yes. So many things in the book.
In her 70s.
Yes. And then, you know, I was trying to sort it, and I thought, well, it doesn't matter, you know, which part is real and which part is fiction. It's a wonderful story. And about the little pin that, was it given to her grandfather, or did Rose leave it on the table? What's the story about the little pin?
Well, the original, where it started from is that in one of the final books of Laura's series, when Almanzo, her soon-to-be husband, is really stating his intentions, he comes home from a trip and brings her this little pin. As and it's when she really realizes that, and I think Beth mentions that in her book, that whole idea of women not being able to show their intentions until it was clearly stated from the male.
Oh, they were very repressed, right.
Right, yes. So, you know, that was her first really knowing. I mean, she knew, but she didn't. It hadn't been quite out there. Yes, and I think his long absence made his heart grow quite a bit fonder, and he wasn't willing to want to wait too much longer with her.
And, of course, girls couldn't put themselves forward in those days. They had to hold back and wait for the man they were in love with to approach them.
Right? Well, and she really didn't have a clue, I think, in the front end, because he was a colleague of her father's.
Yes.
He was quite a lot older than she was. Mm-hmm. And so he was, she really didn't really know what he was about at first.
Yes.
Her dad knew right away.
Yes.
And mom wasn't sure what she thought about it. But
but there it was.
There it was.
That's right. And I thought that Beth's use of that pin as a talisman and wove it through the entire story, I thought that was genius. It was a lovely, lovely way to keep the story going through all the different different phases of you know, the different places they were and the people she met and the surprises in her own life, the protagonist. That little pin was so important.
It was. It was definitely, as you say, a talisman. I have some feelings. The first real delving into Rose was through William Holtz's book, The Ghost Writer. Mm-hmm. And I had big reactions to William Holtz's book. And so I felt myself that the book never quite got away from that. Mm-hmm. And I am very protective. Mm-hmm. Of Laura.
Of course.
And I'm very protective of Rose. In fact, in my own small way, I have seen myself as somewhat of a champion of Rose and wanted to, had thoughts of doing a presentation of Rose too, because it feels unfair to me that Rose was so instrumental in getting her mother to publishers even and agents in the front end and helping so much with the writing, although I do not think that she was a ghostwriter. That, you know, that, and for her to be so forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rose was way ahead of her time.
She was.
And I really felt for her. You know a great deal more about Rose than I do. But I felt for her. I felt her frustration. There was so much she wanted. She wanted those books to be better written. And so she had quite a bit to do with editing, didn't she? And,
absolutely. She had a lot to do with them even getting out there. I mean, yes. Really, she encouraged Laura. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, one of the things that I found in my research that tickled me but made me aware of where it was coming from is back in that era, there was no Social Security. Mm-hmm. And Rose, as an only child, was Laura and Almanzo's mm-hmm. Social Security. And she took that weight very heavily. Mm-hmm. And so part of the reason she was so determined, she saw that there was something in what her mother knew from her experiences that was a nugget of gold. Mm-hmm. And she was determined that that was going to be out there and have a possibility of making some money because it was going to take a little bit of the edge off for her. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that she actually lived long enough to get a little fruits of those labors herself, you know.
In her day, was she as well known as her mother?
She was more well known on the front end. She was a very well-respected journalist from her time at the Bulletin Call in San Francisco with Fremont Older. Mm-hmm. And then she was a pretty well-respected novelist. It never made her so happy, though. She knew she knew how to write novels, but she wanted to be respected as a very literate heavyweight. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of attitudes politically, and she started on a couple of treatises in her later years, but when Laura was still alive. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she ever quite gained that respect.
Is she considered more of a journalist?
She was in the beginning,
yes.
and she made probably the majority of her living off of articles, magazine articles. She wrote regularly for McCall's and The Country Gentleman and for quite a number of them. And she actually got Laura into writing some of those because Laura was getting paid such a pittance for the stuff that she did for the Missouri Journalist that
I've never read anything that Rose wrote. Was she an outstanding writer?
She was a good, yes, I think she was a good writer.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she was a better writer than Laura. Laura became a better writer because of Rose's intention with her. Because if you look at the very first books, they are much more pedestrian. They're filled with lots of good information, and you kind of don't worry about that other part. But the last three, the little trilogy that she had are,
fiction.
They're all fiction, but they're.
I didn't realize that.
I mean, they're all based on true stories, but but within Rose's editing and within the editors at the publishing, they wanted to gloss over things. Hmm. You know, like one of the books was instead of being called The Hard Winter, was called The Long Winter because Hard Winter was too harsh for young children to.
Do people still read Rose?
I rarely come across anybody who knows.
Interesting, because
about Rose
she was the better writer, but
I
Laura
know.
Perhaps had the better stories.
Well, and Rose actually wrote some stories for adults that were versions of Laura's.
Mm-hmm.
Freeland. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of other ones that, and there's a little bit of controversy in some of my research that Laura was feeling a little bit like Rose was competing with her.
Yes, yes. I picked that up, too.
Yeah.
And, of course, that would...
Sure.
I mean, they were mother and daughter. Of course they're competing.
Yes.
Right. And Rose was probably a little more secure in the art of writing.
Absolutely.
And Laura probably didn't realize her lack of finesse, probably didn't recognize that Rose was indeed the better writer.
I mean, she didn't want to. She didn't really want to know that.
Yeah.
You know, she'd been writing for the Journalist for quite a while. And,
and
amongst her own people, you know, she was celebrated in that regard. Mm-hmm. I've read some of Laura's poetry and I've read some of Laura's articles. I've read a lot of her articles from the Journalist. And yes, there were some, you know, she was a farm wife. You know,
right.
She was telling farm stuff.
That's right.
But there's these little lyrical things that she does. She'll do about the birds in outside her window or just charming and beautifully worded that Rose had nothing to do with, you know, so in this book.
Have you thought about writing about Laura and Rose? I mean, it's a
absolutely
wonderful story. It's too good a story to lose. I mean, the dynamic between,
yes.
and that part of it is very modern to me, the story of the conflict between the mother and the daughter. You know, there are layers and layers of that. That would be, it'd be a fine novel, but I'd love to see it on the stage.
I think that's an excellent
idea. Maybe you'll
write
that play,
Lynette. I've been trying to think of where I could go. I have to say, too, I envied Beth a little bit in that she did things that I wish that I would have had the time. Now I feel like I'm just having to have to get myself over to the Hoover Library and start going through all those papers and stuff. But I knew Rose was prolific, and I've read a lot of it from other sources. But...
Right. And I think Rose is a good example of a woman who was kind of prickly and said it like she saw it and was outspoken much more than her mother, who was... of a different era, of course. Do you think Rose is kind of a good example of more modern woman?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Although Laura was outspoken in her own way, but as you say, it was a generational thing. Mm-hmm. I think that Rose came, and her father didn't speak much, but when he spoke, he was listened to. So, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but she was so bright. Right. She was, and as you said, way ahead of her time. So I'm glad that Beth has brought Laura to the fore again. I'm glad that Rose is getting a little bit of attention. I'm not so happy about part of the attention that she gave her, because I think there's too many people who won't realize, who will take it as fact.
And we want everybody to forget about that terrible television series and read the books.
That's right.
And maybe someday there will be a new take on the story and a presentation of those stories in a way that's a little closer to the way that Laura imagined them.
Right? You've sparked an idea for me. I'll see if I can move forward with that.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming in and talking about Laura Ingalls Wilder and Rose Wilder and the Little House on the Prairie books. And I hope that we've stirred some interest out there and people will go to the library and read them.
Thank you and Suzanne so much for giving me this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
So thanks for coming in.
Lynette Hunter and Rosemary Manchester. Earlier in the show, we heard from Bik Minh Nguyen on her book, Pioneer Girl. Thanks so much for listening. You can hear us live the first Sunday of every month at 4 p.m. on KRCV Radio. And a very good way to hear all our shows is to listen online at krcb.org. Or better yet, subscribe to our podcast and you can listen through iTunes. We've had production assistance today from Sean Knight and Mary Moore Campagna. Let's go out with Kelly McFarling's Quiet Down from her album Ridgeline. I'm Suzanne Lang. It's a novel idea.
The pines just sway and the chairs just rock, and soon I forgot all the names that were dropping. Got away from the noise and the talking, 'cause the world's been so loud. Yeah, the world's been so loud. Wanna quiet it down, quiet down. Let the song slip gentle in my my veins. And the sun just sinks, and the chords just change, and it spreads out to the brightest part of the dark. I let in the dark.